The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome to the UAB Director's Chair. We couldn't do it without the Athletic Director. He's Mark Ingram down there. Go Blazers. He is ready to do another show here. And of course, you can hear it on the TKR app at least 5 days a week. Download that TKR app like 100,000 folks have already done. You can hear it as many times as you want or on demand, wherever you get your podcasts. We're available in every major industry to search UAB Director's Chair or Tony Curry Radio Podcast. It's Curry with the K, K-U-R-R-E. And we'll get into it. He is Mark Ingram, and he joins us right now at UAB underscore AD if you want to check him out on Twitter and, of course, UABsports.com. Mark, how you doing, brother? Everything good?
I'm good. Yeah, man.
Fantastic. Let's get right into it. You prophesized quite a bit last week about two different things. One, expansion. You just came back from Vail at the AAC meetings and said expansion is not done. We're not even close. And you also talked about the collectives. Let's start with expansion. Pete Thamel wrote an article a couple of days ago about now two ACC schools, North Carolina and Virginia, that perhaps could be poached by the Big Ten and SEC. Have you heard this story, first of all? And second of all, just talk about, a lot of people would say, wait a minute, if you're going to go after a couple of big schools, why wouldn't you go after a Clemson? Why wouldn't you go after a Florida State? Talk about the geographical parts of expansion for some of these other conferences.
Yeah, well, I have read the article, and Pete is a great writer and a really good guy. And Pete is not usually a person who just, you know, says things for the purpose of saying things. Yeah. So he generally, if you read something that Pete wrote, there's some amount of background to it that, you know, that should make you listen. Every conference is different in terms of what they think is important or what would make their conference stronger. But by and large, it's how can we expand in a way that gives us a better television deal?
Yes.
What would give you a better television deal? And that's television sets. It's eyeballs. And so why did the Big Ten want Southern Cal and UCLA? Well, because of California and the city of Los Angeles. That's an easy answer, and they probably had to get both just to get one. And so that's why, period. End of discussion. The other thing is they're in another time zone. So they're in the Pacific time zone, so that expands how the television network sees the conference. Now they have Rutgers, who's in the Eastern time zone, and then they have, you know, all their Midwestern schools in the Central time zone. I guess they don't have anybody in the Mountain time zone, but they've got now what will soon be two teams in the Pacific time zone. So that really helps their negotiation with their networks. So coming back to your question about Virginia and North Carolina, I'm not certain, but I guess it depends on which league would be wanting, you know, one of those schools, and is it a viewing audience, a size of viewing audience, but also, you know, just constantly trying to make your league better in terms of, you know, you're not adding, you know, nobody's talking to Fordham.
Yeah.
No offense to the good folks at Fordham, but they don't have the competitive. Yeah. Well, they don't have the competitive history that, you know, that North Carolina has. So if you said, well, let's go get Fordham because they're in New York. Well, they are in New York, but I'm not sure that they bring New York, right? And so there's a little bit of both. It's where you are, but also, you know, your history of success. And you could argue that about Rutgers, but here's what Rutgers is. Rutgers, first of all, is a really big school. They have a large alumni base. They have a large student body. And
where are they?
They're in New Jersey. They're in Northern New Jersey.
Near New York. Yes.
Near New York. Yeah. And so they helped bring the New York market, to the Big Ten television network at that time. So
let me ask you this. Do you have a problem? And this is interesting because I was thinking about this. In all major sports, we have divisions, and most of the divisions have the same number of teams. It makes it fair. In the National Football League, you have four teams. So you have Major League Baseball, you have five teams. In NHL hockey, you have a certain number, NBA. In college football, you've got some conferences that have six teams. You have some that have 14. You have some that'll have 16. Do you think that's fair? Because I mean, do you think that's fair, period? That just seems really bizarre to me that college football is as big as it is, but you can have all these conferences with different numbers of teams. You got some teams that play 8 conference games. You got some that play 9. Does it really matter?
Well, it seems to matter when you start having those playoff discussions and who should get in and why and strength of schedule and all that kind of thing. And, I still struggle to say that Maryland is in the Big Ten.
I'm with you.
I mean, Maryland was a charter member of the ACC, and every time I talk about Maryland or think about Maryland, I have to either be corrected or stop and correct myself.
Nebraska, too.
Yeah, Nebraska, too, and who was in the Big 12, you know. So it's I struggle with that, and that's why I bring that up is I think we're leaving Conference USA to go to the American here in about a month. Not quite a month now, and every university has to do what they think is best for them, and I support that. But it is unfortunate that you lose rivalries. So this won't really resonate with our fans here, but the Missouri-Kansas rivalry used to be as vicious and heated as the Iron Bowl or anything that you know of, mm-hmm. and I can only say that because I worked at Missouri for 4 years, and it goes back to the Civil War days. It really is a longstanding, deep dislike for, you know, school to school and fan base to fan base. And then Missouri left to go to the SEC, and they stopped playing. And maybe ultimately that's a good thing, but that was a really good game, football and basketball, that they used to play that they no longer play. And I think that is unfortunate after having played for, I don't know, 100 years. Now they don't play anymore. Yeah. And surely their fans are disappointed that they don't. And the only way they do it is if they come up with a non-conference opportunity. It's like Georgia and Clemson had played for a long time. Now they weren't in the same league. But, you know, you got to rekindle that and do it out of conference to make it happen. And then, you know, when you're looking at a pure success standpoint, if you're Kansas and Missouri, your number one goal is, can we get 6 wins and get bowl eligible? Do you really want to add a team like each other to make it more difficult? And the answer is usually from the coach, no. You know, I need opportunities to get wins, to get to a bowl game, to build momentum for our program. And so that's how those get stopped.
What's so really interesting is Alabama and Georgia just announced yesterday they're going to play a regular season game in 2024, yet it's not really considered a conference game. It's going to be a kind of a non-conference conference game. It's going to be the first time they've actually played outside a championship in years, yet they play in the same conference. So go figure. Amazing stuff. UAB director.
Well, we tried to do that. We've got the pandemic created some scheduling challenges for us in future years, and we've had those similar conversations with people. Hey, look, we don't have you as a conference opponent that year. Would you play us? You need a game. We need a game. Why don't we play? And it wouldn't count against your conference standings, but it does count towards bowl eligibility as a Division I conference opponent.
There you go.
Or non-conference opponent.
UAB Director's Chair. He's Mark Ingram. He's the athletic director. We pull back the curtain every single week. We talk a lot about UAB sports, but we also talk about college sports in general. And we are going wide open with your 4 best 80s bands. There's a reason why I wanted to get into this, and I'll explain it when we do it on the backside of our show, but it's amazing. Pete in Southside, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, on this expansion, wrote a couple days ago, ask Mark what he thinks the final product of expansion will look like. I know when I was doing Jocks with Jay and Al, we talked about doing a 4-16 team conference alignment where you just had 4 conferences, you had 64 teams, and it just makes it really nice and clean. Do you think we'll get to a point like that, or do you think it's going to be scattered out for a while, and do you ever think we'll have a final look or a final product of what expansion is going to look like in college football?
Well, I think you were right about that, but I think it could be 5.
Okay.
I think it could be 5 conferences of 16, which would get you to 80. And that I don't know that, but we're all kind of guessing here, but that's what I think. And, you know, if you get beyond 16 teams, you don't have a conference anymore. You're starting to have something that looks more like an association.
Yeah.
And so there are some who speculate that that's the goal of one or more current conferences, that they are just going to start their own association and sort of be done with everybody else. That would be a travesty, but you never know what others are thinking. But I think, yeah, you and those guys were onto something. I think four, but I think it could be five. And in fact, I tell some of our fans, when we're thinking strategically about, do we need to build or renovate something? What do we need to do? It is, we want to be in the top 80.
Yeah.
Want to be in the top 80. If we're in the top 80, then we get included in that 5x16 model. So we need to be, you know, constantly thinking about what do we need to do, not just to be better within ourselves and within the framework of our conference and the people that we compete against, but long-term vision-wise, we need to be in the top 80.
Something else
and
you
be seen as being in the top 80. That's probably a better way to phrase it.
Something else you prophesized about last week's show, and of course, you can listen to all of our shows, podcast them. They're fantastic, all of them at Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network, or UAB Director's Chair with Mark Ingram, about the NIL. We've talked about it almost every single week because it's always changing, and talking about these collectives. Just yesterday, the IRS said there should be no tax edge because players are being paid by these collectives because it's not considered charity. I don't know if you want to comment on that. I don't know if there's really a question here or not, but I thought that was very interesting that at least the Internal Revenue Service is now weighing in on the NIL situation.
Well, I'm glad they did weigh in because, again, it helps provide clarity. You know, I don't begrudge some of the places that kind of went down that pathway of trying to create a charitable 501c3 to as their collective to so that the fans and donors that gave to it could consider those gifts tax deductible. I think the issues that I have with it, I mean, they were just trying to be creative. So hats off to them for finding a way to be creative. But I'm glad that By the IRS doing this, they've provided some direction and clarity, and there isn't a whole lot in this space about what you can and can't do, but it at least sort of squashes that question. Hey, stop trying to figure that out. That's not a tax deductible gift that people make because it's not a charity. And, you know, my issue with it is, you know, we used to ask our student athletes, and we still do, we'd say, hey, look, we're going to go help build this Habitat house, or we're going to go down to Children's Hospital and read to kids, or we're going to wash the wagons that they use for to pull the kids around, the sick kids around the hospital in. And we're going to go to a local school and clean up their weight room, or we're going to go read to kids at the local school here off campus.
Yeah.
That charity work is a life lesson that you're teaching your young student athletes about how important it is to serve others, how important it is to use the platform that you have as a Division I student athlete. People look up to you because you are participating in a really special opportunity. And so to sort of take that, and I see it a little bit as an abuse to all of a sudden now we're going to pay you to go do that charity work through our collective. I mean, I say this tongue in cheek because it's going to sound funny, but I kept waiting for this, the sort of the gross irony in some, you know, call it a homeless shelter soup kitchen, who's trying to raise all the money they can raise to get by and help feed the hungry. And we're going to send a student athlete down there, or somebody, some school's going to send a student athlete down there, and they work for 2 hours, and then the person running the collective is standing outside waiting on them. And at the end of 2 hours, they put their apron up and they walk outside and they get an envelope with $1,000 in it. And they, you know, and then they tweet out how good it feels to give back.
Yeah.
You know, like really? And listen, some of my best friends in the business, people that I've worked with, that I respect a lot, you know, and again, they're just trying to be creative and find a way to solve this crazy problem that we've now got. You know, they're all trying to justify this as okay. And I'm just like, how can you sleep at night?
Yeah.
You know, thinking that's okay. It's just not okay. It's the wrong message to our student athletes. It's taking advantage of this charity that really needs help. Everything to me about it is wrong. So I'm glad that the IRS weighed in on it.
All right. He's Mark Ingram, UAB Athletic Director. This is called the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every week here on Tony Curry Radio and also on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. I did want to read one more article before we get into our best 80s bands here. And the article reads, "Our coaching staffs are miserable. Is college football losing its soul?" It was written by Brandon Marcello. He's talking about coaches who, quite frankly, just feel like they're miserable. Now, coaches always seem to be miserable. They're always bitching and moaning about something, but it's usually to try to get advantage on the football field. Hugh Freeze said, I wish we would have gotten the foresight to plan better and have better plans with some of the parameters of everything that's going on. This, of course, on the heels, and I can't believe it's been 9 years, but 9 years ago, you remember Jim Harbaugh started these satellite camps, which was a bit of a loophole, and it was a really big concern. I remember talking about it on Jocks, and that is nothing now. You know, you go on to say there's always a ball up in the air, or three or four, right? Brian Kelly said, it's NIL, it's transfer portal. We have to re-educate on gambling. It's always something. Sam Pittman said, May for our coaching staff is the most miserable ever. You're out trying to find high school athletes, and then you've got a coordinator and position coach back on campus with official visitors. We've benefited from that, but I would hate to be an assistant coach right now. June ramps up even more with what May was. It's tough. It's a tough life right now. And it goes on and on and on. Bill Napier finally says, the challenge is to remind yourself of your purpose, why we got into the profession of coaching in the first place. Keep in perspective your original intent. Why do we want to be a coach? You're an athletic director. You've got a first-year coach in Trent Dilfer. How stressful, how difficult, how sustainable is it to be a college football coach right now?
Well, very. And, you know, some people say, oh, I don't feel sorry for those guys, they're so well paid. Well, some of them are really well paid, but the vast majority are not, especially when you consider the number of hours that they put in, you know, and how volatile their jobs are. Like nobody goes home and talks about their neighbor, the plumber, and how their neighbor, the plumber, ought to lose his job because, you know, some other toilet backed up again, or they, you know, they couldn't get the plumbing right at this house. And they're not saying that he should lose his job, be fired, and never work again, the way that people publicly talk about coaches. So there is a stress to the coach. There's a stress to the coach's family, and on that the grand public does not think about, nor do they care about, because they'll say, oh, they just make so much money. Well, again, the head coaches generally make a lot of money. And if you're a coordinator in the, call it the SEC, they make a lot of money. But when you get down to the assistant coaches, they're doing what, you know, the common man, they're making what the common man is making with, you know, out there, and maybe a little better than that. But again, they also work a lot more hours. So hour to hour, I don't think they're any better paid. And then to the point that these coaches are making in that article, what they're saying is, like, you're constantly recruiting. You never have a break. You never have any time off. If you're not recruiting, you're running camps. Well, why are you running camps? Well, to find prospects, you know, and you're which is recruiting, right? And now you've got to protect your own roster because people are taking money from their collective, and they have people on their staff whose job is to know my roster.
Yeah.
Who might they be able to pick off of my roster that's better than somebody on their roster, and then find a way to contact them illegally without anybody knowing about it, so they can say, hey, if you came to our school, we'd pay you this much money. And the kid gets lured away to go be a backup somewhere, you know, for $30,000 or $50,000 and an, quote, opportunity to start. Well, heck, Tony, I got an opportunity to start. Give me some pads.
Yeah.
I got an opportunity to start. And it's just, and so it's just exhausting trying to find the next player, but also trying to just contain your existing roster off of being poached from somewhere else. You know, so the transfer portal window is open. Part of the problem is it's open too long. And what I mean by that is the portal, that opening is for getting in the portal. Once you're in it, you can come out at any time. You don't have to come out by the time the portal closes. It's about, when do you go in? That portal window is open for so long, it leaves too much space for people to get poached off your roster. We need to find a way to trim that down. And then the other thing that we did, layering in with NIL and collectives, is that we passed a rule that allows them to play immediately. So now you got kids jumping from one team to the next because there's no repercussion to transferring. They can just go and play immediately at the next school. And so they get in more readily than they used to. It used to be that you had to sit out a year. And so that slowed people down. How bad do I want to transfer? Mm-hmm. You know, how upset am I? How much do I think I, you know, is it that I'm not starting now, or I don't think I'll ever start, or I don't ever think I'll get on the field? What's the situation? Or I'm homesick, or I just don't like it. You know, at some point people started abusing the ability that, well, if you had a sick relative, you could transfer without penalty. You could fill out a waiver. Well, then everybody had a sick relative, you know?
Yeah.
And then, or if you had a medical issue, well, I've got a mental health problem. So I need, you know, I need to go home because I've got anxiety. Why do you have anxiety? Because I'm so far from home.
Yeah.
So I need to get closer to home.
I do think from a professional player standpoint, you're seeing a more and more players now retire after 4 or 5 or 6 years in the National Football League, even Major League Baseball. The money's so big, they don't have to play, particularly if they've had some type of concussion or they're in a sport where it's incredibly violent. But when it comes to coaches, I'm putting Bill Snyder and Nick Saban in the same sentence because they're both sniffing 70, and Bill Snyder obviously well beyond that. But it is amazing to me. I think a lot of people think that all of a sudden we're going to have more of these Bob Stoop types where in the mid-40s or early 50s are going to decide to hang it up because they just don't want to do it anymore. But,
yeah,
you know, it takes a special person to be a teacher. It takes a special person to be a police officer. It takes a special person to be in the armed forces. And it takes a special person to be a coach. It really does because it is a profession that can last 35 or 40 years. So, all right, great stuff. All right, here's Mark Ingram. Our fun part of the show, something you started a few months ago. We love it. We pick a little topic every single week that gets us into classic rock and sometimes just music as a whole. So I'm listening to Casey Kasem's America's Top 40 last week. I was driving and I was actually listening to a little Sirius Satellite while I was going back and forth between Sirius Satellite and Tony Curry Radio. And they were doing the list, the top 40 for June 3rd, 1980. And I want to give you five songs that were in the top 40 that were played congruently. They were played one after another. The first song was Coward of the County from Kenny Rogers.
Oh,
the next song was Funky Town from Lips Incorporated.
Yeah.
The next song was Pink Floyd, The Wall. To hear Casey Kasem go from Coward of the County to Lips to Pink Floyd, then it went to Air Supply, I'm All Out of Love. And then
I talked about All Out of Love.
I know you love that song, and I thought about you. And then the final song was New York, New York from Frank Sinatra. And I'm thinking to myself, how crazy, and that was just 1980, how crazy was that decade? And I think that's why, for me, the 80s was the greatest decade, because there was classic rock in the 70s, it was taken over by disco, and that's fine. The 80s was such a transitional time. You had hair bands coming, and you had classic rock bands that were huge. You had metal bands that were huge. You had soft bands that were huge. I mean, everyone, and then you got into the Baltimore stuff, you got into the Devo things, you got into the funky, neo-strange type of punk rock. Yeah, it was bizarre. So I wanted to go, and I know this is incredibly broad, and we're probably not going to do too many honorable mentions, but I wanted you to give me your four favorite bands of the 80s. All right. And so I'm going to let you give me a couple honorable mentions and give me your first one.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought it would be so easy. I wanted to take a different approach this week because we've talked to so many of these bands that I would naturally list. We've talked about over and over again, Van Halen, Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Aerosmith, Guns N' Roses, some of these guys that were wildly popular in the 80s. I'm not going there. I'm gonna try to give you some new ones that I think were great in the 80s that I think fit into the category. So I'll give you just two on the honorable mention list. I'm going to start with Foreigner. Mm-hmm. How about Foreigner?
Oh, yeah.
The Jukebox Hero. They had a ton of hits in the 80s.
That album was huge.
It was huge. It was just a monster back then. And the other one, one of the bands, and I love this guy's voice, one of my favorite bands from that era is The Cars.
Oh, yeah.
You might think I'm foolish, but all I want is you. And I mean, I what a great song, but that another great band of the age. So those are my two honorable mentions, Foreigner and The Cars.
All right. Give me your first band, your first favorite band of the decade.
Okay. All right, not in any particular order. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, I thought they were great. I thought, you know, while they were probably considered more of a top 40 group, they had a ton of hits and a lot of different sounds and a lot of different songs and great songwriters. I hate that they broke up, kind of like the Doobie Brothers, man. I hate that they broke up, but that would be the first one on my list. Hall and Oates.
I'm going to go with a band that's been on a lot of my list, and I mean, they deserve to be there, but AC/DC. They have Back in Black that came out in 1980, which is the second biggest selling album of all time. It sold over 50 million copies behind, of course, Thriller from Michael Jackson, but they came out with Back in Black. They came out with another album for those about to rock less than a year after that album came out. That album, Back in Black, was still huge when they came out for Those About to Rock. Then it came out with Flick of the Switch, Blow Up Your Video. Those all came out in the 80s. And what people don't realize is, while AC/DC is huge now, and of course they're going to be playing this Empire Polo Grounds Power Trip show coming up on October 7th, the first time they're going to be live on stage in 7 years. COVID kind of screwed them up. But a lot of people in the States, anyway, didn't know who AC/DC was until Back in Black came out. Till after Bon Scott died, choked on his own vomit, Brian Johnson takes over. That was the huge album. And then, of course, people went back and went, what's this Highway to Hell? What's this Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap? What is this Gone Shooting? What are these other songs? What's this Power album? It's unbelievable. So after that hit, everyone started going back through their discography and all their archives and started pulling up all this old AC/DC. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is a totally different band than the one I'm listening to now. And they were absolutely huge in the 80s. And I just think the 80s is probably one of their best decades. So I'm going to go with AC/DC. Give me your second band.
Yeah. Nice of you to bring up the fact that Bon Scott choked on his own vomit. I'm glad you brought that up on the show.
Well, you know what? It's kind of cool.
Wasn't the first one to do that.
That is rock and roll, my friend.
Welcome to rock and roll. All right. So how about this? Hey, we've talked about this fella as an individual and as a bass player. But before they broke up, how about the Police?
Oh,
before Sting left and did his own thing. I thought the Police were a great band of the 80s. Not terribly unlike Hall & Oates. A lot of hits, a lot of different music. I love they have a bit of a reggae sound, really. Top 40, almost reggae back in the day. But, you know, Every Breath You Take and I mean, just a fantastic group of hits for them in the 80s. So I was a big fan of the Police.
There you go. That is your second song. I'm going to go with a band I know you love, and it's probably on your list, but I got to go with Van Halen, man. Van Halen is one of those I don't really use in lists because they're just so good and so big for so long. But fair warning, an album that just does not give the credit it probably should. When you close your eyes and listen to Fair Warning, you swear it sounds like they did one take in someone's garage.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it sound good. Then you had Diver Down that had all those cover tunes on it, Pretty Woman, and I mean, it was just unbelievable. 1984, which was just an absolute monster when Jump came out. I just remember that song was just, it was played everywhere. You had 5150, which I think is one of the best albums they ever did. And of course, that was the first album they did with Sammy. And then OU812. I mean, they came up with this five albums in the 80s. They were such a huge part and have played in classic rock radio. I got my start in 1982. And I mean, we had a hard time. We have a separation. You know, we use the card catalog, right? So you wrote down on the card catalog, and it had little blocks on it. You write down when you played the song and at what time, and then you stuck it in the back of the card catalog. That's how you got your randomly played songs. We had so many Van Halen cards in our box. We had a hard time separating. We had an hour separation. You cannot play the same band within an hour because you obviously didn't want to play. We had such a difficult time doing that with Van Halen that we moved specifically for that band every 45 minutes. So you could hear a Van Halen song every 45 minutes as opposed to an hour. And that's how big they were in the 80s. So these are our favorite bands of the 80s. Mark Ingram, the UAB Athletic Director. I'm Tony Curry. This is the UAB Director's Chair. You can hear it on TKR and wherever you get your favorite podcast. What is your third group of the 80s?
Well, and I did not include Van Halen only because I think they're the greatest. I just think they're the greatest band ever. Yeah. I mean, they're my favorite. I mean, in every category, everything that we've done when we talk about, let's talk about the best front men. Let's talk about the best bass players, the best drummers, the best. They're all in there. Yeah. And then the best bands and whatever. So I think they defined the 1980s, quite frankly. I mean, David Lee Roth in an interview I love said one time, the difference between the music in the 80s and the 90s is that the music in the 80s smiled.
Oh, yeah.
He said everybody smiled and the music smiled. And I thought, boy, that was really well stated and really does kind of define that difference. So I did not include them only because I thought it would be so incredibly redundant for our listeners. I didn't want to do it. So, okay, so here's number three for me. And not in any particular order, but ZZ Top.
Oh, yeah.
I love those guys. I love their music. Sharp Dressed Man, She's Got Legs. I mean, what a great... You know, their music videos, they kind of hit right when MTV started. They had that old classic car, that red ZZ Top car that they kind of cruise around in. It kind of became this signature of who they were as kind of an association. But I love their kind of bluesy rock sound, kind of a deep southern rough kind of voice, but they were great guitarists, and the beards were just kind of hilarious, and then that kind of became what you knew of them. But I love ZZ Top and thought they were a really important band in the 1980s.
There you go. And I would have to agree with you there. That was certainly, it would have been one of my honorable mentions, and really a band that was really bluesy for a period of time, and then started kind of getting into some sound effects. And I remember Afterburner, they did a couple albums and kind of rubbed some people. They did a song called Sleeping Bag. I think it was 1988, 89. And people were like, what is
Slip
this?
Inside my sleeping bag.
Yeah, but it was a huge hit. All right, I'm going to give you six album titles from this band in 1980. They did six albums in 1980. Mm-hmm. I want you to see if you can name the band. You ready? Progression of Power, mm-hmm. Allied Forces, Never Surrender, Thunder 7, Sport of Kings, and Surveillance.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
If you don't know Allied Forces, then you probably don't know what I'm talking about.
You're throwing me off, man. Who is it?
I'm going with Rick Emmett and Triumph. I mean, I love that band so stinking much. And if you listen, to Triumph, if you listen to their songs, they could have been a Christian band. Yeah. If you listen to Magic Power and Never Surrender, there's Bible scripture in their songs. It was just so happened that they were a Canadian band. It was a classic rock band. And I think a lot of people didn't see through that. But if you go back and listen to Never Surrender or Magic Power, you could play that at OLV on Sunday mornings and people wouldn't know the difference. I mean, it's crazy. But I'm going to go with Triumph. And Rick Emmett, by the way, still looks like Rick Emmett from the 70s, and he's still singing like Rick Emmett. They haven't had to drop an octave at all. He's amazing.
Wow.
He's kind of doing a solo thing with a very small band. But Triumph, man, is one band I never saw live that I would have given anything to see. But I'm going to go with Triumph as one of the great bands of the 80s. All right, give me your last band.
Last one. This is an easy pick for me, and that's Journey. How do you omit Journey from your list of the 1980s bands and that great voice that Stephen Perry had, and Steve Perry, and just so loud and so powerful, and just a great voice that defined who that band is. I mean, without that voice, they're not the same. And but a ton of hits and a lot of, you know, there's a lot of soundtracks that have Journey hits, a lot of movie soundtracks that have Journey hits in it. And so when I started thinking about movies that I love or that time, it's hard to do that without also thinking about Journey.
While they didn't have any songs, with the exception, I think, of the movie Vision Quest, only I think they did a song called Only the Young or something like that. They weren't really a band that had a lot of songs that were the front of a movie soundtrack, but they were on probably more movie soundtracks than any other band in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, they were on all of these Karate Kid things and these Vision Quest and all these movies about...
Yeah, don't stop believing, man.
Stop believing. I'm not... all right, so my final band's going to blow you away a little bit. It's going to be a little different, and it's going to surprise you. Picture This is one of my favorite albums of all time. And then, of course, they had an album called Sports that came out right after, which should be right up.
Huey Lewis.
Yes, I'm going Huey Lewis, the News. Then they had a song called Hip to Be Square, which is a fantastic song off
great.
That. Small World came out in the 80s. But if you just look at Sports, I remember this is where, like if you say of Elton John's classic rock, then Elton John starts doing Disney themes and you're like, we can't, just because Elton John is classic rock doesn't mean we can play everything he plays. We can't do it. It's impossible. You can't play the Lion King from Elton John, and back it up with Leave On or Rocket Man. It doesn't fit. Huey Lewis kind of got in this really weird area. And I remember playing, the first single off of Sports called Heart and Soul, and my bosses, and we were a classic rock station. We were an album oriented rock station. We played some deep stuff and we're playing Iron Maiden and all kinds of, and he's like, this is Huey Lewis and he is classic rock, but this is cutting edge top 40 stuff. We got to be careful here. And then of course they came out with I Want a New Drug. They had a good pop to it. They had Walking on a Thin Line. If This Is It, You Crack Me Up, The Heart of Rock and Roll. And we were kind of like, we got to play it because people wanted to hear Huey Lewis. And then, of course, they came out with the 4 album, and that was not nearly as successful as Sports. And I just remember playing those songs, and my boss is kind of cringe. he would cringe every time we had to play Huey Lewis on a classic rock stage. He's like, man, this is so close.
Yeah.
This is so close to not being cool. But Huey's still on the road.
I know.
There was a story that came out last week that got a lot of traction that he had died and he is still alive and well. Huey Lewis in the News is still on the road. So, and I just... I just remember hearing so much of their music. There were no stories. There was no insightful lyrics. It was all just a bunch of, you know, bubblegum sweet crap, but I loved it. And it was just great. And the album Picture This Man had, you know, Working for a Living on it. It just had so many great songs on it. And there were so many B-sides of that album that really, if you listened to that album, you knew they were going to make it really big on the next.
They were huge. They were huge. And they were easy to love too. I'm glad you brought them up. And not only the all the songs you mentioned, you know, they also did an a cappella song called Naturally,
yes,
which is a great song.
Mm-hmm.
And their harmonies in all their music were really, really well done. And they're just so talented. They're an awesome band. That's a great pick. Huey Lewis and the News. I had all those albums that you're talking about, Four and Sports. Yeah, they were terrific. A ton of hits in the 80s.
All right, your call next week. I have us a list that we'll get into, and of course we'll talk about more about UAB sports and college sports as a whole. And of course you can find everything that UAB is into, Go Blazers, at uabsports.com, and certainly keep in touch with Mark Ingram at UAB_AD. Mark, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week.
Thank you, brother. Go Blazers.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.